Well, hello there, and welcome to this, the Developer's Guide to Windows 10. In fact, this is the snappily named Developer's Guide to Windows 10, open brackets, build 10240, close brackets. Originally we were talking about this as being the RTM, but we've been told that absolutely this is not the way to talk about this thing.
Yep.
This is a new revision of the developer platform for Windows 10, which if some of you have been following the videos up till now, I've recorded some previous series with Jerry Nixon. Jerry clearly is not here. He's spending some time with his family, and Jerry will be back, no doubt, at some point in the not too distant future. But I'm very happy to have with me Shen Chauhan to help present this this two-day event.
Hi, folks. My name's Shen Chauhan. I work in the DX organization under the engineering engagement, and actually I'm responsible for making sure that you guys are able to build awesome UWP apps.
And I didn't introduce myself. Of course, I'm Andy Wigley. I work in the same group as Shen, working for Corp DX. And we've got 2 days of content here for you. If you're watching this live, it's going to be 2 days, and obviously if you're catching the recordings later on. This is an update to the stuff that we did before, so it's new content. We're showing you the new stuff that was released with the first public release of the tools for developers, and we're going to be running through that, showing you all the cool new stuff, and sort of building on the material that we did before. So, to talk about where we've got to with Windows 10, it's really exciting time for us, and I hope really exciting time for you as developers. We've been on a long, long road really towards convergence in terms of bringing things together. You know, we kind of converged the Internet Explorer ways back. And then when you look at sort of when we got to Windows, well, let's look at Windows Phone 7 was actually the operating system there was Windows CE.
That was a while ago.
It's still around. It's still Microsoft's only real-time operating system. And it's great for embedded, that kind of applications. And it was, you know, it's great for battery-powered handheld devices. But it's a different actual kernel, different operating system from what we have on big Windows. So we really started moving these things together. We got to Windows Phone 8, and what we did at that point was we ripped out Windows CE and we replaced it with the Windows NT kernel. So now we're putting in the foundations to allow us to...
Story has begun.
Yeah, that's right. So nothing much changed on the developer platform side of things, but what we were doing there was getting the foundations right and really getting it solid underneath, same OS kernel. And this was a really necessary step. Rewind the clock from where we are today by about a year, and we released Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1, which for this time, this really converged the app model for the first time. So with Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1, you can build universal apps which have got the same developer platform, the same API set.
Yeah.
Pretty much. There's a few differences here and there, but you know, a converged API set. So this is right, really kind of making the developer's job easier. But we've got other platforms, of course, haven't we? Yeah. With Xbox and other devices. So with Windows 10, we're finally bringing all that together. We've got a true, unified core, a unified app platform. And it's not only now about desktop and phone, it's all these other devices, the wacky stuff like the HoloLens.
Surface Hub, one of my favorites.
And tiny little stuff like IoT devices, Windows devices. And future families that we haven't even dreamt of yet. So there's a lot of exciting stuff. And for developers, this is absolutely awesome because this is one true converged developer platform. You can build, use your code across all of these things.
It's definitely a great investment.
Yeah. Now, the last little bullet point on this slide at the moment says easy for users to get and stay current. I mean, this is coming back to this thing about how Windows has changed. You know, we used to have an RTM, a release to manufacturing, and these shrink-wrapped plastic boxes would come out of the factory and people would queue around the block and get their new copy of Windows XP or whatever it was. We're not doing that anymore. It's not it's not going to be like that. So instead, Windows 10 is very much a we talk of Windows as a service. So the idea is this is a platform that we get our users onto, and we're going to continually upgrade that and add value to it, and obviously fix bugs and add new stuff. And the developers can move along with that and create great apps to target that. So it's very much a moving, a developing platform. No big service pack releases. It's going to be a lot of frequent updates, and as it is with this MVA, it's going to be a lot of frequent updates. This being
you'll see many refreshes.
So what we got with Windows 10 now, we got one develop one operating system, one app platform, one of all of these devices, from the very small phone through bigger phablets, through the tablets, two-in-ones like Surface Pro, you know, which can be a tablet and a laptop, classic laptops and bigger desktop all-in-ones, all the way through Xbox and Surface Hub. Surface Hub being the big 84-inch.
It's big, beautiful.
Yeah, this kind of size thing. Yeah. Team collaboration device. And then, obviously, the newer, innovative hardware like the HoloLens and also IoT. So all of these, all these different device families, they're all, it's all pretty diverse, but they're all running Windows 10. This is pretty awesome. So what we've done is, in kind of trying, from a developer's point of view, and actually from our point of view as well in servicing these, is to think of these devices in different device families. So, you know, we've obviously got the devices and IoT family. We've got the mobile family, which is phones and small tablets.
Yeah, it's anything within this 8-inch screen size.
Yeah, that's right. Then we've got PC or desktop. We actually talk about the desktop family, really. Xbox. Then we've got the Surface Hub, which is sometimes called Team. And then, obviously, we've got the holographic sort of family as well, the HoloLens. All of these, so these are sort of, at the moment, we've got six discrete, if you like, little device families. More might be down the line, you know, in the future. And all of these, it's got the same app platform. So, you know, this is awesome. You could, in theory, create one app that will run on all of these devices.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the beauty about the Universal Windows platform.
Yeah.
It makes it nice.
And we have, but obviously what we're not saying here is that we want you to create one app that looks identically on all of these. That would just not make sense.
You definitely shouldn't. Yeah.
It really doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
We want you to create apps that are going to shine on each of these different devices. So we've got a lot of tools. We've got a session coming up, before lunch, if you're on Pacific time. Pacific time.
Before our lunch.
Yeah, before our lunch. So three sessions on, which is going to go deep into the adaptive UI side of things. We've got a lot of new interesting things as well happening in Windows 10. We want to get beyond the kind of old school mouse and keyboard way of input, you know?
Yep.
So there's things like inking and speech input and Cortana, sort of the...
more personal computing side of things.
That's and lots of stuff. We've got a session on that that's happening on day two of this event. Mm-hmm. And all of this is enabled through just a single SDK. We've got one set of tools that does all this in Visual Studio 2015, and then the Windows SDK that enables you to build apps for Windows 10. And also from another bit of convergence. So in Windows 8.1, we actually had two stores. We had the phone store and we had the desktop store. And an Xbox store. It's now one store and one dev center. So for developers and for customers, it's one place to go and find all your stuff. So it's a great simplification. And obviously, this isn't, Universal Apps is not something we've just dreamt up that's radically new. You don't have to throw away all the skills you knew. It's very much an iteration and a development and an enhancement of the dev platforms we've had up till now, but it's just expanding it across very, very more device families. So, we got Windows 10. We've got an operating system.
Yes, which is a good start.
Yeah. Now, this is to give you an idea of how you can build apps at a high level for Windows 10. So first of all, we can talk about, if you like, the traditional desktop technologies. Desktop being, these are running only on PCs, laptops, these kind of things. Mm-hmm. Win32 based, so this is MFC, WPF, you know, these kind of technologies. Obviously, you've got full .NET framework there to use, and these are all absolutely still great ways of building apps, but you're not going to get the cross-device family benefits that you get with a true universal app.
Yes, that's very true.
So talking about the Universal Windows platform, now we've got this big platform, big API set, which is an extension of, it's based on, built on the Windows Runtime API set.
Yes.
Yeah. So to build apps on top of the UWP, and this is the one that expands right across all of these device families, to start on the right there, we can use JavaScript, so WinJS, JavaScript, and HTML, if that's your preferred tools of the trade. For gaming, we've got DirectX, so all those gaming and lots of gaming middleware, obviously, that people tend to use to build these build games. And you can use the C# VB, .NET languages, and use XAML as your user interface technology. Or you can use C++ or C++ extensions.
So it's very similar, I suppose, into the way you'd build an 8.1 app. That sort of whole knowing your languages is still protected, and you just write to the UWP, really. Yeah. It's quite nice.
It is. It's very nice, yeah. We've also got a bunch of bridging technologies.
Yeah.
So we are also wanting to open up the platform to developers who have learnt their skills on other platforms. So if Objective-C or Java for Android, those are your technologies, or you're in a web developer, I'll take those three first, and then I'll talk briefly about Win32. We've got technologies that are sort of in development and different stages of readiness. I'll talk a little bit more about them in a short while. But these are they allow you to take those skills and create universal Windows apps. So you don't have to come and learn, you know, if XAML and C# doesn't excite you, you don't have to come and learn that. You can actually use the tools that you're used to using, but still get access to this huge market. Because what we're talking about, what our goal is, and it's been mentioned quite a few times, is that we will have over 1 billion devices running Windows 10 within the next couple of years. So this is potentially the biggest ecosystem in the industry.
I suppose with a bridge, what you're really saying is you're trying to make sure people can reuse as much of their existing code as possible to come to the Microsoft platform.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Cool. The last one then, Win32, is a technology that we've got coming called Project Centennial, which allows you to repackage the stuff on the left there, the Win32 apps, and distribute them through the store and call out to Universal Windows Platform API. Yeah. So over time, move them over to a store distribution model and have access to all the cool stuff that's in the UWP. So we'll talk about them in a little bit more detail. So what is the UWP? Well, it is this single common API surface, and it's huge. I mean, we're not talking about a small API surface here. It's a huge API surface, which is the same on all these devices, right from a Raspberry Pi through to a Surface team.
That's really impressive, because that does allow you the flexibility to go to many devices, I suppose. And you never really know what app, you know, is going to be running on those.
No, that's right. That's right, yeah. Now, what we've done, this API surface is it's a massively expanded Windows runtime. So it's the same stuff we had in 8.1. If you bring code from 8.1, in general, you're going to need pretty minor changes to have that running on under UWP. You're going to tweak your UI a bit, and we'll show you about that. But what we've done is we've kind of componentized that runtime and divided it up into what we call API contracts. So an API contract is just a kind of a public API surface. So, and we version that. So you can think of this build 10.240 that we've got today.
Yeah.
This essentially is version 1 of the UWP. We're not talking it in those terms. We're talking it's 10.0.10.240, you know.
Yeah.
So we've got in 10.240, we've got a bunch of contracts which actually are version 1. So the eight individual API contracts that are in this first public release are the version 1 of these. And what this is a way of, in time, obviously, we will add new functionality to some of these contracts, add new APIs or new methods on existing APIs and this sort of thing. So we add functionality and we'll fix some bugs and this kind of stuff.
Yep.
So then that API contract will move on to version 1.1 or something like that, or 1.0.5 or something. But it just allows you as a developer to keep track on what the changes, and you can choose to target in your app. We've got a session called Adaptive Code, which is coming up first thing this afternoon, if you're watching this in the Pacific Coast, which you can actually target specific versions of these APIs. But in general, you're just going to want to, just not worry too much about that, but it does allow us that fine-grained control over changes that's going on. So it's this guaranteed API surface, and there's a mass of stuff in that, and this is just, I dream up a few API sets, and you can multiply this 100 times and you get a feel for just how much is in here. So, obviously XAML is in there, all the sensors, the accelerometer, the magnet location, tiles, appointments, and background transfer, NFC, you name it, it's
just
in
loads.
There. It's loads and loads and loads of stuff. So just to give this slide, just to give you a sense of the broadness of what's in this thing, and this is across all of our devices. Now, in terms of a developer, slight change of thinking here. And I was talking about those API contracts and this Universal Windows platform, this 10.240 version that we've currently got out there. So when you build an app, a UWP app, you're not really building a Windows 10 app. although Windows 10 is the first platform that has that, of course, but you are actually targeting, thinking, it's just a shift in mentality. You're targeting the UWP, so yeah. It's a platform. So Windows 10 will be revved. We're going to issue new updates of Windows 10, I don't know, every 6 months, 3 months, 9 months, whatever.
And I think this is it is kind of different in a lot of ways, because you never really check the operating system. As a matter of fact, you probably don't care so much about what OS it's running when you think about it,
no.
Because you are literally just saying, well, this is the API set I'm interested in for my app, and that's
yeah.
it. Yeah,
that's
which is nice. It's like similar to .NET, like you get to the .NET version.
That's right, yeah. Exactly like that. So So this is it, you're targeting the UWP, and the UWP will update at its own cadence. It
yes.
kind of, you know, we'll ship updates out to target systems through Windows Update and this mm-hmm. sort of thing, and it will update at its own cadence. So. Now, this is the sort of thing you might see in the package manifest of an app.
Yeah, I've seen this.
It's actually not like that. It actually goes, if you look at a new file, new project, it goes 10.0.0.0. But what actually happens is when you build the app, it goes and looks at what you've set target as your in your project properties as being the platform you're targeting, which today is 10.0.2.10.2.40, indeed.
Magic
like
number, yeah.
And it inserts that in as your min version if you've got this target yes. device family name windows.universal. So what you're saying here is I've built my app, and the minimum version of the UWP that this particular package will run on is 10.2.40. Which, of course, is the only version right now.
Yeah.
But think of, you know, 6 months down
versions.
The line, there'll be another one, 10.0. I don't know, 15.750.
Yeah.
I'm dreaming,
just random
I'm dreaming something up there.
Something higher than that one.
Something higher than that, yeah. Yeah. And at some point in the future, there'll be a 10.5, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, what you're saying there is, so you've got a min version saying, this is the my app package will run on that version and higher. Min version
yes.
is the baseline. So any systems that haven't updated yet, and remember, we're going to be updating consumer systems
yeah.
very, very frequently, keeping them all up to date and moving along with us. And enterprises have their own cadence, so they can delay things a little bit. But essentially, your target machines are going to be on the latest version of the UWP. But there will be that little window where yeah. a few haven't updated yet. They've not been connected to the internet or something.
And I suppose one of the sessions we've got later on is the store. And really, they look at this to make sure that they always bring down the right version of
that's
the app
right.
to the OS.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
right. And in the store, we can have multiple different
packages,
versions
yeah.
of your package.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, yeah, I this package will only run on 10.2.40 or higher. And I've tested it, so I have actually, I'll guarantee that it will run on 10.5. This is a
yeah.
mythical future version. Yeah. Doesn't mean it won't run on 10.6.
Yeah.
But what it means is that if it does run on a 10.6 system, it will get 10.5 behaviors.
Because yes.
they're quirked down. So here you're bounding the range of versions that this particular package will run on. So this is, I said this, Universal Windows Platform actually is kind of updating independently of the OS. It is the app platform. It's something that will update and move on and add new APIs to. This is another thing that in the past, the old way of doing things, where we were on this kind of multi-year ship cycle, and we'd ship a big version of Visual Studio along with a big version of Windows.
Yeah.
This was kind of constricting for our product development teams, because they had these moments in time when they could ship new versions, and there wasn't really an easy way of shipping stuff sort of out of band. I mean, we've been doing that yeah. with NuGet and things like that over
that
the years.
Thing where everything had to align just right.
Yeah,
and
that's
it made
right, yes.
things more shiny.
So yeah, so we are, we want to, you know, we're going to we can allow that sort of independence. So we got lots more flexibility. It means we can get new stuff out to you much, much quicker. And then, you know, you can get an advantage to new stuff. So we got this single binary. So we are creating one single binary that will run across all of these different device families. So this is different. This is different for from 8.1, where actually when you compiled a universal 8.1 app, you ended up with two different app packages, two binaries, one for phone and one for desktop. But this is actually really is one binary that will run on any of these devices.
And I noticed that we have like a blank app universal Windows. So that's the one we'd normally see, right, to start a universal Windows app. We won't have like loads of different templates and things.
No,
like
no.
That.
So yes. So yeah, we've had a question about
yeah.
these templates. So that's a good point in calling that out. So no. So we've gone away from shipping project templates styles out in the box. So Visual Studio just ships with this blank app, which
yeah.
is actually not terribly helpful for you if you're looking for design inspiration.
Well, we won't be too innovative. We don't want to restrict them either by saying this is the template you should use, right?
And this is part of the problem is that if you ship templates in the box, you end up with a lot of me-too apps.
All the ones in the store just start looking like templated apps, and we don't want to.
And also, you think, and you know, I've been guilty of this as well. Back in the phone days, we had this. We used to be fairly strict about how things should look, and these days whatever, you know, do what you like, you know. But it did mean that you had a lot of identical looking apps, and that's kind of dull for dull for users. So we give you a blank app, but doesn't mean that templates won't turn up, because we have the Visual Studio Gallery,
correct,
and the community will come up with models for a particular style of app that you can use as inspiration for your new designs. Jerry Nixon, who is not here, is working on a new project template called Template 10, which has got lots of MVVM goodness baked into it and lots of good patterns and that sort of thing. That's not a design pattern, but that's an example of a different new project template that's the sort of thing that when it's finished, he's working on at the moment. It's up on GitHub, aka.ms/template10. And you can contribute to it. It's on GitHub and it's open source. And that will end up, I imagine, in the Visual Studio Gallery, as will others. So, we're not kind of being too prescriptive about it.
All right. Thanks, Herbert, for your question, by the way.
So let's have a quick look at an app here. That's what I'm going to do in a bit. So let's actually go and let's go and start a new session with Blend. I'm actually not even going to start with Visual Studio. How radical is that? So Blend has had a complete rebuild in Visual Studio 2012, and it is Visual Studio. It's Visual Studio with a Blendish shell on it. So you can actually do all your development in Blend. So it's not sort of missing things like IntelliSense and all that kind of stuff that developers felt a bit restricting the old Blend. But I'm going to create myself a new project in Blend. The reason why I've come into Blend is because it's the quickest way of creating a nice app with some UI, because I'm going to create this blank app. Using the blank app template, so we're creating our project.
App three,
yes. Yeah, yes.
It's a great name.
Yeah, that's right. Clearly, I've used all my energies up on app one and two in the past.
Yeah.
So this is my new project, and if you're used to building apps under 8.1, this will look all pretty similar for a XAML-based app. The only difference is this guy here, project.json. This is the new
package product.
Package.config. So this is NuGet version 3, but it does the same job as NuGet version 2 does.
Yeah.
But this is now a JSON file, as you can see. And interestingly, Microsoft .NET Core is now actually shipped as NuGet packages. Yeah. So it ships with your app. .NET is... So this is another example of how we ship dependencies in the package. So you've got independence from the underlying platform. And it's a UAP. I just wanted to call that out. You don't have to worry about it. If you want to work with NuGet, you just go into add references, manage NuGet packages.
It's the usual goodies that you'd be always used to. It doesn't change, right? Which is great.
But anyway, that's an aside. What I'm going to do is create myself some data. I'm going to create some new sample data. So I'm going to create a data source in the project in app.xaml. And I'm going to enable that sample data when the app is running. Now, while that's just building, you'll see here the designer allows you to visualize what your design looks like. I haven't got a design at the moment, on the different devices. So I could change that to an 8-inch tablet, like that. And then I'm going to just drag this items and drop that onto the canvas here. And it says create a pivot and bind its item source property to items grouped by group. Now, that's interesting in itself because the pivot control was a control that was only in Windows Phone 8.1.
Yeah, and it's made it across.
And it's now made it across to UWP.
Yeah. And what's interesting to know is that drop-down where you selected the 8-inch tablet, that's all available in Visual Studio as well, right? So the Visual Studio Designer has that same...
Yes.
That same nice UI.
And my system has just frozen. Oh, dear. It's first demo, first crash of the day. That's not a good start. So... we'll just pause for a minute, and then actually what I'll do is I'll go and open app two, which you will not be surprised to know. I just ran through this earlier to make sure everything was working all right.
Well, the sample data thing is actually kind of neat, because it means you don't have to go and sit there and generate all your code yourself. And it's sometimes that's time consuming and you just want to get on and start building your app. And I always like this. It's always a neat way to just get stuck straight in there.
Yep. Yep. Right. I'll tell you what, let's try and let's go off to my projects.
Oh, I think Blend App.
Do you think it did?
I don't know. Something just.
Well, that might be good news. Depends on whether it's chuntering away. Yeah, and we're going to be shipping updates for our tools frequently as well.
Yes.
Hey, there we go.
They look very comfortable, those chairs.
Yes, there we go. So there, we've got our UI, and it's just some chairs. This is people will be familiar with this, perhaps. This is our standard out-of-the-box sample data. So it's useful for demos and little else, to be honest. Right. Now then, and this will work, obviously, on a local machine. So just run this on the desktop. So this now is a desktop app. The interesting thing about this as well is that on Windows 10, this is what we call an immersive app. It was tablet app, if you like, you know.
Yeah.
But, well, that's what it was. So these are now full windowed apps, just the same as anything else. So, and here's our pivot. And you'll notice this is a smart control, the pivot, because it knows I'm using a mouse here.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got these little adornments for navigating the pivots of this pivot control.
But you could swipe as well, right?
And if I swipe, and then those adornments disappear. So,
oh, that's nice.
Why have I got these big X's on the top? What's all this about? It's kind of weird. But anyway, so you think, and also now, actually what I'm just going to do is go off into settings. I'm going to switch. Now, if this was a Surface Pro, which it isn't, then I'm going to go off to settings and go and find the tablet mode, which if you remove the keyboard on a Surface Pro 3, it does this automatically.
And that's also available in the notification part as well, this tablet mode, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Good call. Yeah. And now our app has gone full screen. So it's now a tablet. This same app knows about being a tablet app as well as a, and obviously we can actually dock that to. I could if I could grab it.
Oh, there you go.
And then dock it to one side, and now it goes half a screen, and we can go back to our Visual Studio on the other side. So these apps are completely, you know, up-to-date, modern apps, windowed apps as well. And all that's very good. I now need to go back to,
Show the notification.
So, no, it's not over now.
Yeah, there you go.
Right, there we go, sorry.
On the file, right.
Yeah, so. What's going on here? Yeah, so that's not shown on there. So let's go up into settings up here. And then we can go back. We can turn that tablet mode off and I can get back to my desktop mode. And of course, we can run it on a phone. So we can run it on a phone emulator as well. We just pick the phone emulator, run it on there, and all very good. And the phone emulator is down here, so that will pop up in just a second.
What I've noticed here is you've selected a half a gig emulator, so I'm assuming they come in different memory footprints as well, so you
Absolutely.
Can emulate based on.
Yes, they do. So this is the low end phone, But and there's our chairs as well, and the pivot works just great on a phone, which is the So there you can see that's working nicely on the phone. One app, one binary, one code, all the same. Now the final one is kind of cute. So, this will also run. This device here,
the Raspberry Pi.
There is a Raspberry Pi. This is a $35 maker computer. $25. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's cheap.
$35 in the US.
Yeah, and it's got an HDMI out. It's got a little SD card which has got the image on it. So we just released this week IoT Core for Windows 10 UWP. So this is
so
the same platform.
So people can go and download it and.
You can go and download it, you can get device list, install it onto this. It's got an HDMI out, and in order to run, what you have to do, that you come with this tool called the IoT Core Watcher, and I'm on one little network here. So I've got you can copy the IP address of this device here. And then over in here, we can switch to ARM. We can go to the project properties. go to debug, and we can select to go to a remote machine. And there we go. I can pop in my IP address, turn off user authentication, doesn't like that.
Yes.
There we go. And then now I'm going to actually try and run it on the remote machine. So if we could have a look at the output from the Raspberry Pi,
I can see
the screen way over there. So
if you go to deploy it, we should now, hopefully.
So we should see that pop up on the Raspberry Pi screen in just a second. I haven't got a mouse or anything on the Raspberry Pi, but you know, you've got USB ports. You could put a mouse on it.
You can definitely click around, and it's a UWP app, which is nice. So you still get the same experience across both, which is cool. Obviously, you'll get additional things on the Raspberry Pi, like the GPIO controller, which you'll talk a bit more about later on, and that's quite nice. So you can still go and do your usual IoT goodness.
So we're still deploying. So it's still. Trying to send that, that's just succeeded. So here we go, we've got a splash screen coming up. This is a Raspberry Pi.
That should look familiar to some people.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't bother with any artwork on this. So that's
it's
and there's our chairs. So this is a XAML, full XAML, rich XAML-based app running on that. Now you probably want to think, I know I'm going to talk about adaptive UI, you probably want, if you are going to do this sort of thing on a small device like that, you want to have a simplified UI.
Yes.
You're not going to get all the fancy animations and graphics acceleration that you get on a smartphone or on a, on a tablet or PC, but proves the point. This is the same software running just great on this really tiny device. That's really exciting.
That's amazing.
Good. All right, so let's go back to the slides. So that was Hello Devices, meaning all the broad devices. Just to stress this, this is one operating system, one app platform, one dev center, and one store. We're going to talk about the store in some detail tomorrow.
Yes.
This is obviously one of the new things that we didn't really have in the tech preview. So we can start telling you much more about the store story. We've got more updates coming in the future. But this is a true unified platform. And we've got all these device families here. So. We've got all these different device families with the different actual devices underneath them. And all of these kind of bring their own benefits to the party, if you like. So each of these device families has its own unique shell. And the shell is the way that the computer interacts with the end user. So, you know, the start screen and the start menu is obviously the desktop and laptop and convertible is obviously the one that we have actually released publicly now and is rolling out to end users. Obviously on a smartphone it has its own unique shell as well and this sort of thing. So each of these adds features to it. So they all add their value. But obviously what we're not saying is all of these should have identical UIs. I mean, that demo we just did actually did, but that's not actually really what we're about. So we want you to be able to create an adaptive UI that really makes the app shine on each of these different devices. So we're going to talk about a little bit in much more detail in a couple of hours about adaptive design and how you actually build this. But just to give you an introduction to this, a lot of the controls handle basic responsiveness. You saw that in that last demo.
Pivot was a great example.
And the controls know about whether you're using a mouse and keyboard, if you're using touch, if you're running on a tablet, if you're running on a phone, you know, this sort of thing. There's a lot of intelligence built into them, so they'll handle a lot of stuff. And then you'll need to use your own design skills to modify the layout of things to give a good user experience so that whichever screen your user is using to look at your app, whether that be a 4.5-inch smartphone or a 2-inch IoT, I don't know, up to a real big screen, you want to make sure the user has a great experience. So that's where your skill comes in to start adjusting the layout and think about the user experience on these devices. So we've got new features like visual state. Well, that's not a new feature. No, we've got new aspects of using it.
But it's definitely more important now than ever, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can tailor the design to give a specific user experience on different platforms. So here's an example of adaptive design, which essentially is the same view, but shown on two different devices. So clearly on the phone, it's full screen. In fact, Windows are always full screen on the phone. So that's the only option, as it is with the tablet. Mm-hmm. And then we've rearranged the call button. So this is a fictional version of maybe a Skype-like kind of application. Um, and So we've arranged the stop call close call button is longer on the phone one, and we've drilled in on that image and made that central. So and we've put the little thumbnail of the people making the call is just up there in the middle on the right. So we made good use of the screen layout and give it a good user experience. But then when you go over to a big screen, we're in on running in a window on a desktop. Then we kind of rearrange things, stretch it all out, show a bit more of the image. So we're making sure that we've got a good user experience on those different screens.
You're just enriching based on the hardware available, I suppose.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Now, here's an example of actually tailoring the design. So this is obviously a calendar-like app. Mm-hmm. Now, clearly on a tablet or desktop, and if you're running full screen, you've got advantage to show loads of information. So you can show the full month view, you can show the kind of date picker, you can actually put some selectors on there to filter things, and all that is visible up front on the same kind of view, and you're making good use of all that screen real estate you've got. But when you move over to the phone, here's a way to think about this. You know, you want to be thinking about these, what's the use case for these? And a phone is more of a glance and go sort of a thing. Yeah. You want to pull it out, have a quick look, what's my next appointment? So that's the primary view of the phone view, is to show that your next few appointments, because that's the main usage. And we can actually measure this through telemetry and see how people are using your apps. You've obviously still got the hamburger menu at the top there, so you've still got access to all the other functionality, but the primary view is the kind of the glance and go one. So there, you're creating a good user experience again by actually really tailoring that design and giving something quite different on those devices. And we'll drill down into this in a few hours. Yeah. The last one to talk about in this topic is the continuum for convertibles and phones. So continuum is this exciting, well, actually continuum is what we have with the Surface Pro.
Yes.
Where one device can switch from a desktop mode and a keyboard mode to a tablet mode.
Yeah.
But actually we're bringing that out for phones as well. So we showed a demo of this at Build, and we've announced that this is coming. So a little bit down the line, we should start seeing devices coming along that will have this great feature. And the idea here is that, you know, think about a smartphone. It's a super powerful computing device, you know. It's got all that amazing. I mean, in fact, what we do with a smartphone is we only run it at high power for very, very short spells to give a good user experience when you're actually interacting with an app. And the rest of the time, we crank it right back and we sort of hobble it. And
you
make
never
sure
utilize that power.
Just, because obviously the key resource that needs protecting on a smartphone is the battery. You know, and nobody loves a phone that the battery runs out before the day is out. So that's the absolute holy grail. You just got to protect that battery. So, but we have got all this computing power. So why not, when you get home, stick it in a dock, put it on power, and then run it flat out. And maybe you connect up a big screen to it and a keyboard and a Bluetooth keyboard and a mouse. And hey, what have you got? You've got a PC experience, but running off a smartphone.
It's very similar to, you know, traveling. When we fly a lot, we need to go to a hotel room. It's a great way just to plug it into a big screen and you get big windows, which
That's
is nice.
Right. Yeah. And this is awesome. And we see a lot of popularity potentially for this for people who want, you know, want a top end, a flagship phone, but maybe don't really want to have loads of other devices.
Sort of carrying all those devices around, and, you know, this is a great way to do that.
So this is coming as well. And also this kind of illustrates as well, even if you have got a mindset today that, oh, I only build phone apps, you know, so I'm only interested in these kind of screen, this sort of thing. With UWP, you're going to have to think bigger than that, because even if you have an app that is used primarily on a phone, even on a phone, it can end up on a big screen, because we've got this continuum experience. You need to think about this adaptive design and how will this app look when it's on a bigger screen. And, you know, the kind of truism here is actually users love apps that give a great experience on all their devices. And this is the key thing we want as well with UWP and with Windows 10. And we see, obviously, people more and more have not just one smart device, they have a number of smart devices. Mm-hmm. And if they've got an app that runs across all of these devices, you want to make sure that they have a great experience on all those devices.
So at the moment we're talking a lot about going from small screens to big screens, but also vice versa. So if we see where the Raspberry Pi fits in, for example, it's got so many different sensors. And the nice thing about that is you can utilize your UWP and the sensor parts to capture all the information and maybe feed it up to the cloud. And it's got a small screen just to show maybe a minute amount of information enough to get by, but then you can have that same UWP app on different screen sizes, like the phone or the desktop, where it enriches that experience, giving you more data and information about what that Pi is able to see. So it's a great fit across those devices too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So this is your mission as a developer, is to create a great experience across all of the user's devices. Now, just to give you a quick look at that adaptive UI. So we're done with that one. Let's go off and, if actually we're done with that one as well. And we don't want the system settings. Let's tidy things up a little bit here. Now then, here we go, Blue Yonder demo. So this is our colleague put this together, Dave Crawford. And this I'm going to run this first on the desktop. And at the moment, this is not a responsive design.
No.
So it's not a bad looking app. It's got the split view control, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a little while. And you'll see that it's here it is running on here. But as we resize the window, which is absolutely something a user can do, well, the image moves, but the content is just getting lost.
It's not really a great experience.
This is not a great experience.
I see that's your flight, Seattle to Heathrow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, not 9th of February. Okay, no. This is a fictional thing. But as you can see, nice looking app, but it's not really giving a great experience as we resize the screen. So actually, to make some mods to this is pretty simple with this particular demo here. So I'm going to stop that. And let's drill down into the XAML here. And here, this is all the stuff you could see there is this. Here's our split view control. Split view pane is the bit on the left with the kind of the navigation
surface. Pieces. Yeah. Yep.
And then we've got scroll view, which is the main content area. Mm-hmm. Inside that's got a new control called the relative panel, which is great for rearranging blocks of content relative to each of its
siblings.
As the
name suggests, yeah.
Indeed, yes. So this is the main content area, and we've got that's got other controls within it. So we've got the promo area. So we've got these islands of information. We've got a flights grid, and then we've got more stuff. So you can see there's kind of different bits in the search grid at the bottom, different bits of it. But the important thing is up here is at the moment is this, which is commented out. Which here we go. So this is this new visual state stuff. So I'm just going to bring that back into the project, and we're going to talk about this in a couple of hours. Let's uncomment that. And now what this is doing is defining different states that can be applied at different times. And actually the trigger for that is on the window width. So we've got a medium window width, which is above 660, but below, as it turns out, 1,000 effective pixels. And on the wide state, well, then we set some properties on some of those bits of that display. So we set the display mode of the split view, we set the pane to be open to be true, and then we use some relative panel alignment stuff to put the banner text in a certain place. Then when we get to the medium state between 660 and 1,000, then actually we're reducing the height, the banner image dot height, which was 240, is now down to 180. The display mode of the split view goes to a different mode called compact inline. The pane is closed. We close and turn that to false. And then we do a load of other stuff. We reduce some font sizes. So we're shrinking stuff down. And then the last one, don't have to be in order, clearly, as you can see, is the narrow state. So min window width of one. So this is from one to the next one. Chooses the best fit. And here we're changing our load of other stuff. We reduce the height again and this sort of thing. And we reduce our font sizes again. So the effect of that is quite startling. So, and it's quite nice and easy. So there's not a lot of stuff there. So actually we're already narrow. Yeah. So now we've already got a good narrow view. And then as we widen out, oh, there we go, it jumped out. So we've got this adaptive design going on. So you've got, as the window resizes, you've still got a good user experience. And as we get even bigger, then it changes out. And you see the pane on the left?
Came out.
Yeah, pane comes in and out. So this is kind of some of the sort of things you can do. And actual fact, the narrow view as well, of course, is actually pretty much what you want on a phone. So let's put it back on our mobile emulator. And on there, then you've got a great user experience for this app. Whereas the previous unresponsive one would have been unusable. So, that's all pretty good. That'll come up on here in a moment. And there we go. Looking so out. Yeah, and now it's a vertical scrolling thing. All these blocks of content, the miles, the search box, have all been rearranged into give a good user experience on this narrow screen.
So you get a lot of win just for adding visual states, really.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so. Right, back to the slides. So that was a quick look at adaptive UI. We're going to dig deeper into that. Yeah. Now, the other thing I want to just mention here is adaptive code. So we've got platform extensions where, you know, we've got all this broad universal Windows platform, loads of APIs, and that's what most people are going to use for building out their apps. But there are these, you can actually light up your app on specific device families. There are, you know, fewer or more different APIs that are unique to these device platforms. Yeah. You may not need to use any of these, but if you do, they're there. And the way that they are exposed is through platform extension SDKs. And you can add these into your single binary. And that doesn't mean that, oh, if you add the desktop extension SDK, all of a sudden that's the only platform it can run on. No, absolutely not. It just means that when it is running on desktop, you can take advantage of the APIs that are in that extension SDK.
So you're saying I could have an IoT extension and the mobile extension and the desktop extension in my UWP, and it will deploy fine to any of those, even though I've got multiple.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, we've got all these, you know, these different device families. All of them are running the Windows Core OS, and all of them have the UWP on it, this broad, you know, and all the same at this point. But then you can add these extension SDKs. So we're showing one example here for each of these. And that means when it's running on that particular platform, it can run, it can take advantage of the APIs in that extension SDK. But it doesn't mean, you know, that it means that when you add these extension SDKs, you get the metadata for all of those APIs, which allows, you know, C# compiler and IntelliSense and all that to kind of just work in Visual Studio. But the check on whether that API is available to use has to happen at runtime. So we've got an API to do that. And this is this. The API information is type present. So this is a runtime check to say, is this type actually usable? You know, so essentially it's like a device check to see where we're running. It's more finite than that. It's down on a particular type.
But this just checks API, right? So it doesn't check to see if the hardware is available. It just says the API is available, and you'd have to do the check of the hardware.
Yeah, that's right. So. Yeah, so this is it. The API information is type present. Now, to give you a little bit of a flavor of that, I've got another demo for that.
Oh, I love virtual desktops.
Yeah, so this is a little, this is just a simple photo snap kind of app, this sort of thing. So this will run on both the, run on anyways. These are UWP APIs, so this will run all of them. It's incredibly big on this. Let's shrink it down a little bit. So there we go. So I can put a title in, hi, and then we can take a photo, and then we got this sort of thing. Now this is interesting here. You see this? This is the camera options UI.
Okay.
So this allows you to change the contrast or the brightness. So you can modify things like this. There I am, and then we can take our picture. In mid gasp, there we go. So you can see that works just great. Now that camera options UI, if I run this on the phone, doesn't actually appear because the camera options UI, the rest of it, the media capture, is all UWP.
Oh, right. Okay.
But that one little bit, that pop up, the extra stuff, is desktop only.
Yeah. So you're lighting up based on the desktop.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice.
Now the way that, so here we are. We can still take a photo. And there we are, we're in the emulator.
The emulator's sort of there. Yeah,
yeah. So that all works, but the actual options doesn't come up. Now, the reason why that is, the camera options UI there, if I just remove in my references the window desktop extensions, delete it for a second, in a minute, IntelliSense will come along and say, or maybe it won't.
Yeah, there
yes,
you go.
Yes, it will, there you go. We'll say, camera options UI does not exist. We just removed that API. So in order to add the extension SDK, we just go add references, and we can drill down again back into our extensions, Universal Windows extensions, a whole bunch of stuff in here.
Oh, yeah.
SQLite, MS Test, and there's the desktop extension, so we can add it back in again. And then that'll be happy. Now, the reason why that didn't try and show up, we'll look at this a bit more in a session and a few down the line, is this runtime check was saying, is this type present at runtime? And if it is, it will show that UI, which is why it showed on desktop and why it didn't show on the phone.
Understood. Oh.
Okay. So there you go. That's a quick, very quick look at that. Right, just a quick talk about Microsoft Edge and the web platform. So we've got a new browser, as you well know, Microsoft Edge, which has got a whole bunch of masses of enhancements. So what we were about here is Microsoft Edge is about giving you a browser on Windows 10, which has loads and loads of interoperability. It's about interoperability. Yeah. It's about making our browser consistent with behaviors and accepting a lot of the extensions that are commonly used on other platforms.
Just so the web just works, right?
It's about making sure that the web just works, yeah. It's too much of this stuff where things don't render properly on certain browsers. Yeah. We don't want that. So, but it happens to be a very, very lean and very, very fast browser. So you know, look at the benchmarks, the Jetstream, which is Microsoft Edge there, actually,
So this is Apple's Jetstream.
Apple's Jetstream, that's right.
So it's Apple's benchmark. So you can see we're doing really well, actually. So the higher the better,
And then this one, Octane, this is a Google
This
benchmark.
Is Google's,
That's right. And again, we got another great performance of things from that as well. So from that benchmark, it's looks to be the top performing browser in the market at the moment, which is really cool.
And Edge is also on a continuous...
And again, it's also, we've just got the first ones out there, and that will be continuously updated. Now, related to that, I mean, that's about the platform. So in terms of the UWP apps, so we need to just talk briefly about the bridging technologies. So first of all, hosted web apps is this new thing. So if you have got a website, a single page website, you can very, very easily turn that into a UWP app. So you can effectively ship your website through the store. Your code all stays on the web browser, on the web server, but your users can kind of access that site through the store. So we've got a little bit of a demo here for Microsoft Edge. Now this is a thing called CodePen, which is this kind of sketch pad for front end developers. It allows you to sort of paste in some HTML and some JavaScript. So here we've got HTML on the left, a couple of buttons, and you can see the UI down at the bottom there. It doesn't actually do anything here. And they've got JavaScript at the moment. The JavaScript associated with that is if type of windows do not equals undefined. So this is calling out to UWP. Now then, let's turn this into a hosted web app. So we're going to create ourselves a new Windows Universal JavaScript app. So this is a blank app, a UWP app. And we call it HWA sample. And here we go. This is the start of a full native JavaScript and HTML app. But we're going to delete most of it because we're going to have our stuff is going to be on the website. So we delete CSS, JS, WinJS, and default to HTML. And now we're going to go off and just edit the package manifest, which is kind of about this app. And what we do is going to go off and find, if I can find it, where is it? That was start page. See, that says default.html. I'm going to paste in the URI to our website, which is actually the specific codepen.io one that I just showed you. We also need to put some content rules on there, application content URI rules. So this is if that website actually links to a URI, if they're covered by these content URI rules, then they'll stay within the app. Otherwise, it would launch, you know, your browser, like Edge or whatever browser you've got installed. So here we're matching that specific one, and we're saying type include, and then we're going to allow Windows runtime access to be all. And we'll have another one as well, which is a kind of more generic rule for that website as well, UWP kind of rule. Put another match equals HTTP, and then we're going to put just the general codepen.io.
So it's wildcarded there.
That's right, and that also needs to be type equals include, and it also needs to be Windows runtime access equals all. And actually, that is pretty much it for our basic. We can now run this. This is now an app, a UWP app, but actually what it's doing is going over and fetching out the content from the web. So you can update. This is now in the store, imagine. It's not at the moment.
Yeah.
You could ship this to the store, and that's it. And you could update this on the website, on the web server, and do your updates that way.
So this is actually now an app.
Yeah, so now an app. And now the Windows bit does the, this is a system pop-up message. Now, the toast notification still doesn't work. Now, I've got a bit of JavaScript saved away, so let's go and pull that. Here's the, this is a function to show a toast. So this is calling the UWP APIs to actually do a toast pop-up. So this would actually, we could update the server, but because we're not going to do that, we could do that, but instead we're going to use the facilities of CodePen and actually just simply paste it into the window. So we can run our app again, and that should be good. Right, okay. Well, we could have pasted that in and that would have just popped up and done a toast. So actually we're running a bit short of time, so I'm going to just move on quickly to talk about the other Windows bridges. So the Windows bridge for Android, otherwise known as Project Astoria. This is tooling to allow apps written for Android to run on Windows 10 mobile, so not desktop, but on phones with few changes required. There's a sign up for a limited developer preview at that site, and then at the moment we're inviting developers in and asking them to work with them to run their APKs through our tools and kind of help figure this out as to how, you know, get towards shipping out as soon as possible. So we're still working very much on this, but this will allow you to call a subset of UWP APIs, do tiles and notifications, that kind of stuff. We've got a Windows bridge for iOS, where you can build universal Windows apps using Objective-C. You can import your Xcode projects. We have just open sourced this.
Yes, it's available on GitHub.
It's over on GitHub. Yeah. You can actually help contribute to that. We'd like your help. And we've shipped the first preview of this, and we're looking to do a full release later in the year. So that's one we're working on. This allows you to bring Objective-C code in and create universal Windows platform apps using those skills. And the final one, Project Centennial, this is where a new solution for taking your Win32 base, your traditional Windows apps, and classic Windows apps.
Yeah,
and packaging them up so you can distribute them in the store, and they you can then ship updates that way, and you can access, again, UWP APIs and services, and we're going to share more about that. We showed a preview at Build back in March, and we're going to share more just as soon as we can. Right, finally, let's just talk about the development tools. Visual Studio 2015 editions. We've got Enterprise, Professional, Community editions. And the good news about the community is it's entirely free. And it's very feature rich. Another great news as well, it's really easy now to develop and unlock your devices. You don't have to go and sign, log onto a developer account or anything. If you want to do sideload stuff, just do it. So you can go into settings on the devices and just turn on the developer mode. You get a pop-up saying you do realize what you're doing here, but it's under your control. So really easy to develop stuff on your devices, on both this example of the phone and the desktop. Right, where can you develop? Windows 10, obviously. But you can also develop on Windows 8.1 and Windows Server 2, any 12 R2, but with some limitations like the designer won't work and that sort of thing. And clearly, if you want to actually run one of these things, you need to be able to remotely connect the remote debugger tools onto a Windows 10 device. And finally, dev.windows.com is your home, for all the Windows developers. This is where you can find out, you can get the tools, you can get code samples, get information, sign into your dashboard, do app submissions and all this sort of thing. We're going to look at a lot about this tomorrow about when we get into the store.
Yeah.
All right, so that was the lightning introduction to the UWP.
We definitely went through quite a bit.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Yep. We're just going to take a very, very brief breather. Yep. We're actually just a few minutes behind schedule, and then we're going to come back and dig deeper into the XAML controls. So we're looking at the XAML developer
side. And of course, if you want to review some of the stuff we've already gone through, feel free. The videos will be available, within about 24 hours on demand. So, don't worry about sitting there jotting everything down. It'll all be available. All right.
Okay. Quick breather, and then we'll be right back. See you soon.
Thank you.